Let's turn tonight to a different part of the Old Testament, a different book. I think we spent the last couple of weeks in Isaiah. And so turn to the Old Testament book of Jeremiah. And we're going to go through this, and it's going to be really quick compared to Isaiah. And then I think in your workbook, it's page 153. So notice at the top of the page for lesson 31, that the top of your page is, this is going to cover both Jeremiah and also the book of Lamentations. And there's a very good reason for that, which I'll share as we go through it tonight. If all goes well, believe it or not, we may get through both Jeremiah and Lamentations, because this is going to be a very cursory look at some of these prophets. Isaiah had a lot more in it, and we also talked a lot about an introduction to the Old Testament prophets. So I'm going to kind of give you some highlights and some of the context for Jeremiah, and then as you read it in upcoming years, hopefully you'll be able to keep it in the proper context, and it'll make more sense and more impact. So on page 153, they simply call this lesson Stand Up. And I think that's because you're going to find that Jeremiah is quite a man of strength and courage when he had to stand alone. And he had to stand alone a lot. So look in the first verse and the first couple of verses, and we'll start working through this page and filling out some things, and mostly the first chapter is where we'll focus as we start. So in the very first chapter of Jeremiah, it says in verse 1 that what you are about to read are the words of Jeremiah. And he identifies himself and his family tree as the son of Hilkiah. But what's important is Hilkiah is of the priests who were in a place called Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. Now, Jeremiah says in verse 2 that the word of the Lord came to me, and he gives you the setting, okay? He tells you the time frame when he got this message. It came in the days of Josiah, who was a son of Ammon, who was king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, who was a son of Josiah, king of Judah. And the message from God came to me until the end of the 11th year of another king named Zedekiah, who also was a son of Josiah, king of Judah. And the word came to me until the exile of Jerusalem in the fifth month of that exile. Now, there's a lot in those verses. And most people, when they read through something like that, they skim over it quickly and don't realize you've just gotten the context and dating of the entire book. So you've got to keep, as you go through the Old Testament prophets, It helps so much to remember that you do have a split in the kingdom. You've got the northern... I'll probably put this up every week because it helps to keep it straight. You've got the northern kingdom of Israel, and you've got the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, when Jeremiah is speaking, he starts listing some names of kings, and these are all kings of Judah. So, when you start reading the book, and you can see it in your workbook and circle this. But according to the first few verses, Jeremiah's task is to be a preacher or spokesman to the southern kingdom. Okay, not the northern kingdom of Israel, but the southern kingdom of Judah. And you see that in the first couple of verses with the kings. Now, in those verses, it lists Josiah, Jehoiakim, Zedekiah. I'm going to list about three kings. Well, three or four there. But what happens is he kind of gives you bookends of the kings under whose reign he served and he preached. So your book in the next paragraph says, after prophesying to the southern kingdom, that there were five kings on the throne during the time of his prophecy. So let me just give those to you, and a couple, several of these are listed in the text, but they serve as bookends. So during the time that Jeremiah is a spokesman or preacher, there's five kings of Judah, And those are listed as Josiah, who was a good king. And I know these names are funny. They're kind of funny. But I also will say, if our names are put into a chart like this for them back then, you know what they would say? Y'all got some funny names. Like, how come they ain't got a Hebrew in them where it's like connected to Yahweh, like all of our names have in Elohim? I don't know what's wrong with y'all. So it sounds funny to us and strange, but to them, very clear. So Josiah was a king, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and then Zedekiah. So the other, Hezekiah was also a king in the south, but not during Jeremiah's time. And Jeroboam, Ahab were kings in the north. So they just kind of put a chart, we just circle those five. Now here's what's important to me. This means a lot to me, and you don't see it in the text. If you take the first king, I think Josiah, during his reign, and go through the last king, Zedekiah, prior to the southern kingdom being taken into exile by Babylon, this is crazy. I wish I had asked it first, but I'm just going to tell you. If you want to know how many years, I can't write when I was born, how many years did Jeremiah serve as a prophet? Over 40 years. And where are you getting there from? Well, these five kings. And we know when they were on the throne. Listen, that is a long time in the Old Testament to serve as a prophet. Now, we don't really have a dating of a lot of the other prophets, but Jeremiah had a very, very long ministry as a prophet. So if the prophets back then, if they went the way we go today in churches, the average tenure of a pastor in a typical church is 2 to 3 years. Right? 2 to 3 years. And remember when I hit my 15th anniversary, Billy made the comment. He said, you've lapped yourself 5 times so far, so you got to stay put. But the average tenure is about 2 to 3 years. Churches don't have a lot of stability anymore with leadership. So if you think about that, and then today you look back in history, I'm thinking First Baptist Church of Dallas, W.A. Criswell was there for 50 years as a pastor. That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know how long Falwell was at Thomas Road before his death, but long time. You don't see that as much anymore. So in their day, for Jeremiah to be in a position of preaching and prophesying and proclaiming, a spokesman for God, over 40 years is a very long time. And I'm going to tell you this here, as you read through it later, or if you've already studied it, Jeremiah did not have an easy ministry. Nobody liked him. And they put him in stocks. They put him in a cistern. And they ridiculed him. They tried to assassinate him. They could not stand Jeremiah. And yet he stood. Okay, that's why I think the title of this lesson is Stand Up, something like that. Because Jeremiah stood. So it wasn't an easy ministry. And so with the five kings that he served during their time, you end up with over 40 years of his ministry. Now remember, I'll probably get to this later, but the last king of Zedekiah, when Jerusalem or Judah, when they were finally conquered by the Babylonians, you're at about that year 586 BC with the final destruction of the temple and all the city of Jerusalem. Guess who was there at that time? It was Jeremiah. Jeremiah witnessed the destruction of Jerusalem, and he also had the opportunity after that destruction to either go with the exiles or stay put. So Jeremiah's had a very long ministry, and he saw a whole lot of stuff in the southern kingdom of Judah. Okay, all that comes out of the first two verses with the list of kings he served under. Now, a little bit more information in those verses, as we read it, is you also learn that Jeremiah's daddy was a preacher. Now, he was a priest, not the same thing, but what I'm saying is he was a leader among the people of God when it came to the temple and their worship. He was a priest. And so Jeremiah has grown up, he's kind of grown up in a priestly home. You know, we jokingly say today that if you are the child, well, I don't know if you knew this. I know people here call me PK for Pastor Keith, but actually PK stands for preacher's kid. Like, seriously, if you're anywhere, if you're an MK, you're a missionary's kid, and if you're a PK, you're a pastor's kid. And so it's kind of funny. But Jeremiah grew up as a PK, basically. You know, he's a priest kid, if you want to put it that way. And so he grew up in that kind of context. He was in a place that I think is pronounced Anathoth. I've also seen it pronounced Anatote. But he grew up in that place. And then one more thing about Jeremiah that's not going to come out until later in the book. Jeremiah had a sidekick. That's what I call it. And the sidekick's name was Baruch. Now, Baruch, I think your book says that Baruch was a scribe, and he wrote the words that Jeremiah spoke as he dictated the words. So basically, a scribe was a glorified secretary. And that scribe's job was to take the words Jeremiah spoke and to write them down. That's what a scribe does. So he had his personal secretary named Baruch, and later in the book, I think it lists there chapter 36, but I think it's even later than that. The shortest chapter in the book of Jeremiah is one about Baruch. So Baruch also didn't have an easy time with Jeremiah, because every time he turned around, his boss is like, you know, being threatened and being persecuted. And Baruch hung in there. So I've got a good word to say for Baruch as well, as his personal secretary and scribe. So that sets a stage some for the book and its context. Is there anything that you want to add, ask, share before we jump more into his specific call? Yes. That is a very interesting observation that I honestly had never thought about. When did Daniel get shipped out? I thinking Daniel got shipped out with the first, which was like 605 BC, I think. So the point is, Jeremiah was ministering during that same time when Jeremiah and the, like, you know, those young men would have been taken in like an earlier exile prior to this final destruction. Wow, y'all, that's good. I'm glad I came now. I just had to. That's been one of the most amazing things to me when you try to study a little deeper, is to see the overlap of some of the Bible characters and stories. Because we keep it so isolated. All right, the book of Matthew. All right, then it was the book of Mark. No. Man, there's overlap everywhere. Okay, Old Testament, you know. All these different figures. And especially when you've got like early years and, you know, Noah's day, you're living, you know, 800, 900 years. There's a lot of overlap there. You don't think about it. They were building that boat and some of these other guys were still on the earth and walking around, and they're like, so anyway, that's a very interesting.
Very interesting. Anything else you want to share that'll make it worth me coming tonight?
Except for Larry. Larry's already shared about good food, so he made it worth coming.
Anyway, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when we get to Daniel, you'll see the dates there. All right, so there's a couple I want to point out. Jeremiah, I think, is 52 chapters, and we're obviously not going through all of this. But I want to point out a few big deal things in Jeremiah that just to be familiar with and know that this is where these passages are located. So Jeremiah, as you continue in chapter 1, you kind of get a little bit of his call to ministry. So remember Isaiah was in chapter 6, and he sees the Lord high and exalted on that throne, and all the, you know, seraphim and all the angels there. And like, who will go for us? And Isaiah's like, hey, I'll go. And God said, okay, but you know what? They're going to hate you too, right? Okay, are you seeing the theme here? If you stand for truth in a world, right, worldly system under the power of Satan, if you stand for truth, you're going to be hated. You know? And it was like that back then, and it's still like that today. So Isaiah had a call. Now Jeremiah has a call, and it's here in chapter 1. So then when you get down to verse 4, here's what Jeremiah says, personal, kind of an autobiography of how he was led into his prophetic ministry. He says, "Now the word of the Lord came to me saying," this is what God said. Now I don't know how I communicated. I wish I knew. I don't know if, I would love to know when the Old Testament says, "And the Lord said to someone." Like, I don't know what that means. I want to know, Jane. I want to know, you know, was it like a little voice in the ear? Was it something with the Holy Spirit? You know, I don't know. But Jeremiah said, "I know for sure the word of Yahweh came to me." And here's what God said to him. Now, you're familiar with this, but if you didn't know it was in Jeremiah, here's a context. God said to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I already knew you," right? "And before you were born, I consecrated you. And here's what I've done, Jeremiah. I have called you and appointed you to be a prophet to the nations." Now, let's fill in some blanks and we'll come back and draw some application. First thing it says with Jeremiah's call to ministry, God makes it very clear, even before Jeremiah was born, he had a plan for his life. Now, let me, in case you haven't made this connection, I got to get my pencil the right direction because it's got, okay. So why is it that people that believe the Bible hold to positions that are for life and against murder in the womb? Well, there's several reasons, and it seems to be pretty clearly taught in Scripture that at the moment of conception, you know, one is made in the image of God. But you can also look here in Jeremiah, and a lot of times this is used as an argument in defense of life of the unborn, because even before he was born, God already knew him, right? And he says in that verse, "Before I even formed you in the womb." Now notice, it's not "I formed you outside the womb to make you a person," but even before we got to that point, "I already knew you inside the womb as a person." So, "When I formed you," or "before I formed you in the womb, I knew you," before you were born, etc. The point is, God has a plan. He's got a plan for every person created in His image. And you don't know what that plan is. Jeremiah had no idea in his life that ever that God would take him and even from the womb would call him to be a servant, to be a prophet, to be a spokesman for God. So he had the special assignment before he was born. Now continue reading through. So God says to Jeremiah, "Even before I formed you in the womb there, I was making you in the womb. I knew you there." Okay, before you were born, I already had appointed you and called you to be a prophet. Now here's what Jeremiah replies in verse 6. Jeremiah says, "Alas, Lord God, you had to have made a mistake." Okay, that's paraphrase, all right? I mean, now, you have got to have made a mistake. And here's why he said that. "Behold, I do not know how to speak. I'm just a youth," right? I don't have many years of experience and wisdom and knowledge. I don't have that to go on. It can't be me that you're calling to serve as a prophet to the nations. But God said to Jeremiah in verse 7, "Don't say that I'm just a child. I'm too young for this. Don't say that, because everywhere I send you, you're going to go. And everything I command you, you're going to speak." But I thought Jeremiah said, "But I can't speak." Oh, this is good. If God calls you, He will equip you. Right? So Jeremiah, "I've called you to be a prophet to the nations, but I can't speak." No. You're going to go and you're going to speak. "But I'm scared." No. You're going to go and you're going to be a wall. Okay, you're going to see that in just a minute. "So everything I command you, you are going to speak. So Jeremiah, don't be afraid of the people that you're going to speak to, because I am with you to deliver you, and this is the declaration of
of the Lord Himself. Verse 9, Lord stretched out His hand, touched Jeremiah's mouth, first person account, and says, hey, now I put My words in your mouth. I've appointed you this day over nations, over kingdoms. You're going to pluck up and break down. You're going to destroy and overthrow and build and plant. Now notice here in Jeremiah's ministry, out of six verbs, four of them are verbs of destruction. Okay, the bulk of your message is going to be one of judgment. But you're also going to have a message with the last two verbs of building up, right? And restoring. Okay, so right from the start, Jeremiah is told that it's not going to be an easy task. And you're going to see more of that later in this chapter. So let's get back to your book. All right, so before he was born, God had a special assignment. Jeremiah says, but Lord, I can't be the right person. I can't speak well. I'm too young. God said, don't be afraid of that. Is this going to go up here and fit? No, it's not. Let me make sure you get that. Can't speak, too young. So then God says, not to be afraid. Because in verse 8, He says, the good news is I'm going to be with you, right? And I'm going to deliver you from all the ridicule and everything that's coming your way. And then what's important here, oh good, it did fit. All right, what's important here is a task God gives to Jeremiah. Now notice this. Primarily, Jeremiah's task is to proclaim truth to the southern kingdom of Judah. But notice what God says. I'm not just calling you to be a preacher to the southern kingdom of Judah. I'm calling you to be a preacher to the nations. Now, that to me almost sounds like what the call to Billy Graham must have been from his mother's womb. Billy Graham, I'm not calling you just to be a preacher to the United States of America. I'm calling you to be a preacher to the nations. And my goodness, did he ever do that? So Jeremiah does not have just a localized ministry in Judah. That's his primary ministry. But God says it's not just that. I'm calling you, in verse 5, to be a prophet to the nations. Now, I need you to do something. Just kind of jump ahead because I want to fill in some things as we go. So, if God has called Jeremiah to be a prophet to the nations, are there messages in these 52 chapters that are directly spoken to the nations? Well, yes, there are. If you want to make yourself a little note, I think it starts in chapter 40, 46. Yes, 45 is that short chapter about Baruch, who was a scribe. Now watch. Starting in chapter 46 and pretty much through the end of the book, through chapter 51 into 52, but especially through 51, all those chapters right there are nothing but messages to the nations. So if you look in chapter 46, he starts off with a message to Egypt. Chapter 47, a message to Philistia. Chapter 48, a message to Moab. Chapter 49, a message to Ammon. Middle of chapter 49, a message to Edom. Near the end of chapter 49, a message to Damascus. A message to Kedar and Hazor. A message to Elam. Chapter 50, a message to Babylon. Okay, Jeremiah, your message is not only for the people of Judah. I'm calling you to be a prophet to the nations. Now, I'm going to tell you, just so you are aware of this, because I didn't say it in Isaiah, all three of your large prophetic books, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, they all three have very large sections of messages to the nations and not only the people of Judah. And it's a little bit of a task reading through those because we don't know the cities and the peoples and the circumstances, but they've all got messages for all the surrounding nations around Judah. And that's what God said to Jeremiah. I'm calling you to be a prophet to all of the nations. So I'm going to stop again if you want to add anything or ask anything. Or Jane, I think I saw yeah. I think I saw a little.
A little tidbit, I don't know. I read it somewhere that people were saying that Jeremiah was God's speaking through the prophet.
And hang on to that when we get to Ezekiel. Ezekiel is a very good example of acting out a lot of visions and things like that. I hadn't thought about that difference before, because I'm thinking like New Testament, I think it was in dreams with like Joseph with the birth of Christ. Moses, I think he flat out heard the voice of God. I think he flat out heard, you know, the divine voice there from the burning bush. Of course, it says there an angel of the Lord was in that bush, which, you know, kind of believe may be pre-incarnate Christ. But it's very, I mean, it's interesting to think about how they got the message they got. Of course, the Ten Commandments, Moses didn't write those, right? So the finger of God wrote those, had them on the tablets. But that's an interesting thought with the prophets and priests versus, you know, a different person receiving some kind of dream like that. Anything else that kind of stands out to you or something you want to share? Well, we may not get through all of Jeremiah and Lamentations tonight, but that's okay. See, I think I get too carried away. I kind of get excited about it because I think it's kind of neat to do. I mean, over 40 years. That's a long time. And they hated him. How about that for your resume? Your ministry resume. I served in the same location for 40 years. And they hated every day of it. But I stayed there. Anyway, that's what Jeremiah did. So then, in another part here in chapter 1, right at the end of the chapter, your book points out that there are kind of three metaphors that God uses to encourage Jeremiah with his ministry. So in verses 17 through 19, your book says God ordered Jeremiah to stand up and stand strong. Okay, that's the stand up title for the lesson. He promised to help keep Jeremiah strong. We saw that in verse 8. I'm going to be with you to deliver you. So then there's three particular objects that God compared Jeremiah to in verse 18. So on page 154, if you look in verse 18 and 19, and then we'll see this at the top of page 154, here are the three objects. God says to Jeremiah, "Now behold, I have made you today as what? As a fortified city." Okay? They are going to hate you. I mean, they are going to try to destroy you. They're going to persecute you. But I have put strength in you like a fortified city. Now think about a fortified city. Your book describes it this way, which I think is a pretty good answer for that first metaphor. That God says to Jeremiah, "I'm going to protect you." But when I think about a fortified city, I'm thinking about a city that is ready for the attack. Okay, a city that is fully prepared for the attack and the onslaught. Jeremiah, there is an onslaught coming. There is an attack coming. But I've made you a city prepared for that. Okay, the walls are up. We've got our defenders stationed in the right places. Okay, we are prepared for the attack. That's what I'm making of you, Jeremiah. So I'm going to make in verse 18 a fortified city, number 2. I'm going to also make you like a pillar of iron, like an iron pillar. Your book describes this. Well, you think about it. Sometimes in historical sites, they'll have monuments of some sort that kind of symbolize or signify a very important event. Maybe, you know, just the way a particular people held their ground with some kind of battle, something like that. And so God says to Jeremiah, as an iron pillar, the way your book sees it and words it, it's going to be like he is a lasting monument that won't be destroyed, can't be broken down, can't be cut down, will be lasting. And so while the attacks are going to come your way, Jeremiah, I'm making you strong like a city, ready for the attack, like a pillar that cannot be toppled. And the third object in verse 18, I'm going to also make you like walls of bronze against the whole land. So I'm going to make you like a bronze wall. Every city, when you think about a fortified city, every city would have some very strong walls. When God speaks to Jeremiah, He speaks about making him that kind of wall again. He is there to withstand the attack that's coming his way. This is not an encouraging start to his ministry. For God to have to say, I'm going to make you like a city, like a pillar, like this bronze wall, man, it's not going to be easy. 40 plus years, it's not going to be easy. So your book describes it like a heavy-duty bronze wall that simply cannot be disassembled, because most walls are built of stones, right? But as a bronze wall, Jeremiah, you're going to stand. And you won't cave. So as you start the book, this is what God says to Jeremiah. I've called you. You're going to be a prophet to the nations. And even though it's going to be difficult, I'm going to be with you and strengthen you. And these are metaphors he uses. So let's read the rest of verse 18 and 19. So I've made you today like a fortified city, a pillar of iron, walls of bronze, and I've done it against the whole land, to the kings of Judah, to its princes, and to its priests, and to the people of the land. They will fight against you, Jeremiah, but they're not going to overcome you, for I'm with you to deliver you. Now here's what stands out to me in those verses. When I get to the end of verse 18, and he talks about the defense and strength he is going to have, I would expect that God would say that, I'm going to make you strong like this in the face of the enemies coming in to attack. But notice who it is that's going to be fighting against him. His own people. Isn't that something? End of verse 18, it's against the people in the land. The kings of Judah will fight against you, Jeremiah. The princes and rulers in the land will fight against you. The priests are going to fight against you. The people of the land are going to fight against you, Jeremiah. And I'm going to make you stand. They'll fight against you, but will not overcome, because I'm with you. All right. That's the call of Jeremiah. 40 years now, over 40 years, he's going to serve under 5 different kings. Pretty much every king except one is going to hate and persecute and not listen to him. That's how hard the task is that awaits Jeremiah.